Welcome back to Offworld, the show where we talk about all things space exploration and pop culture. I'm Ariel Waldman.
And I'm Norm Chan. And today we're going to be talking about a movie that just came out. We saw it. It is Ad Astra.
Yes. So spoiler alert, we are going to talk about the full movie. So if you don't want spoilers, then maybe go watch the movie and come back to us. But if you're okay with spoilers and want to figure out like if the movie's right for you, definitely jump in.
Let's take a listen.
Okay, so we are talking about Ad Astra, and we have a really awesome guest, a repeat guest, which I'm really excited to have back on the show. Doug, can you please introduce yourself and say a little bit about what you do?
Sure. My name's Doug Vakoch. I'm president of METI, an organization dedicated to messaging extraterrestrial intelligence. I'm also a clinical psychologist with a private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area.
So this movie seems right up your alley. It seems to check a lot of boxes.
It does. It does. How can you not like something that captures two of the great passions?
Mm. Yeah. So let's just get right into like, what are your overall thoughts about Ad Astra, just generally as a movie?
You know, everyone likes a good space adventure, an action film. And, you know, this one has it, from fierce baboons out to kill you in zero gravity, a moon buggy chase with space pirates. But it also has a more introspective element. And so I thought it was a nice balance. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I felt like the movie was like not balanced because I loved the space adventure aspect of it. But the plot was a little. You know, lacking in depth, I guess, maybe. They were trying to be really in-depth, but I don't know. Norm, what did you think?
I think I agree in terms of how much we love this near future world building, right? Like, with commercial spaceflight as it is, projecting far out, they never say exactly how far in the future it is, but what could space exploration look like when we have a base on the moon, when going to Mars becomes a regular occurrence, when we have a space elevator, right? And these are things that we sometimes rarely see depicted in film. And when being an astronaut seems to be like established profession with lots of people who are astronauts who may not go to the moon because they're, you know, running the space elevator. That I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah. Doug, what was some of your favorite depictions just overall?
Well, I think I would disagree with your characterization. So I like the depiction of the future. And yeah, there was a certain subtlety. There was a certain slowness of the pace. But I thought there was a real unfolding of what it's like for an astronaut. So I think, you know, the key to good science fiction is create this other world that is informed by science, but then talk about how we as human beings live in that world. So I think it's always the temptation to imagine being an astronaut in the far future is going to be like being an astronaut right now. And I think that's not the case. So I think that's something that they were able to pick up on.
That's true. What about like the visual depictions? Like what was your favorite visual depiction?
You know, I envy anyone who can have a huge antenna that is devoted to search for extraterrestrials. So I got to give it that. And they have one in Earth orbit and one out at Neptune as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, so for me, like one of the favorite visual depictions was some of the moon scenes. So it's like they're on the moon and the moon is a disputed territory. And that gets into some of the international treaties of, you know, where no one can own the moon. But at the same time, the U.S. has put forth laws where what you mine, you own. And so the idea that there's disputed territory and people are sort of there's moon pirates and everything depicted on the moon. And then you see them on this moon buggy and they're going and they're trying to get away from these moon pirates and they go into the darkness of a crater. And so you see it go from that bright white to that really dark, crisp darkness into the crater. That I thought just like it's really beautiful filmmaking.
So this is, so what captured you was a lot of these kind of big vista, great visuals. Mm-hmm. For me, I liked the little subtle details so that, as you were saying, Norm, it's sort of like the world that we have now projected into the future. You take a trip to Mars and when you get in, it's like being in a New York subway station and you know, there's actually
you
the subway franchise.
Underground. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was actually really nice to see.
They never made it exactly clear the purpose of the settlements and the the bases on the moon. Was it just to be a spaceport? They did say that, you know, these are regular flights, right? It would be a commercial flight to the moon. And so they had, interestingly, that the quarantine period, a whole well thought out process of how these flights would go. But why did we have this space? I think
some of these answers were given really in passing. So as you were pointing about, there are these disputed areas, and they're mining companies. Mm. So there's a commercial reason. And when you think about it, if you're going to be building a huge antenna around another planet, you don't want to schlep all the raw materials from Earth. And so actually, that's one of the rationales for going to the moon, of being able to do mining and create something of commercial value there.
Yeah, well, and I sort of read it as the moon is a commercial space, more or less, but Mars is a military space, mm-hmm. where sort of they have a secret outpost so that they can maintain communications and everything. So you just see him go straight underground, and then he's just in the military facilities, more or less. So a big part of the movie, and a big part why I'm excited to have you on the show, Doug, is because the film, you know, this is a major part of the spoiler, but, you know, the film shows that the main character goes out to Neptune and to get his dad, who's out there, and his dad discovered that the answer to SETI, the answer to searching for extraterrestrial intelligence, is that, yes, we are alone. And he goes kind of bonkers because of that, more or less. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well,
like, does that worry you that we might go bonkers if we get a definitive, yes, we are alone?
I think he went bonkers because it was devastating to his worldview, because he knew that there are aliens out there. And I think they really captured that nicely throughout with a number of the astronauts, of this was a religious quest. This was knowing our destiny and that we're connected to something bigger. And I think discovering that we're not in this scenario was devastating to him. I don't think it maps on to the SETI scientists I know, who are really holding that possibility that maybe there's no one out there. Mm. I think at one level, it was implausible to be able to claim that you can know that there are no intelligent civilizations out there. I mean, even if you have an extensive search, can you really get all of the billions of galaxies? But I think, again, this is a case where there was some subtlety built in, because what they're saying is that survey also looked for any microbial life on other planets. And now, you know, we go outside, we look at these stars, all of them have planets. Many of them may be potentially inhabitable. But in this science fiction film, what they found after looking at presumably millions of planets is that there was not even bacteria on any of them, which they could tell by changes to the atmosphere.
Of all the kind of far-fetched technologies in terms of how long it takes to travel between, you know, the planets here, it seemed like that was the biggest jump. The fact that, one, I want to hear, would it make sense for there to be some type of research facility at Neptune or at the edge of the solar system? What benefits we actually get from that? Is that something that has any grounding on reality? And two, like, how could we actually see like microbial life across not only our galaxy, but the universe from that perspective?
Great questions. First of all, is there any advantage to going out as far as Neptune for searching for extraterrestrials? There isn't. I mean, there are advantages to getting away from the TV and radio signals that we generate on Earth. So there have been serious discussions about putting an observatory on the far side of the moon where it's shielded from Earth. But to then go the next step out and say all the way to the outer solar system just doesn't make sense. Your second question was,
from there,
could you see bacteria? Yeah, you could, because that's not too far in our future. In the next 20 years or so, we will have orbiting spacecraft that will be able to look at the atmospheres of other planets and tell whether those atmospheres show there's microbial life. So Earth has been giving off evidence for 2 billion years that there's simple life. And that's something that is within our grasp right now. So if you look at a million planets and none of them have even simple bacteria, then that's looking pretty devastating for getting intelligent life. So I think you got to take those extra leaps. They're not going to, if you don't find any radio signals, what do you say? Well, maybe they weren't transmitting. Maybe they're transmitted at a different frequency. But if there isn't even simple life, you're not going to have intelligent life.
So it's not so far-fetched for him to jump to that conclusion after the decades that he spent.
But I think that's an example in this film that you have to make some inferences and you have to have some leaps. Like when they're trying to communicate, as you were saying, there's this base on Mars that's used to communicate with Neptune. Well, if you look at the film, it looks like this is something that's happening in a few minutes. It would take 8 hours for that round trip exchange. But if you give them a little credit and say, well, this shot could indicate a long period of time, then you can interpret it. You can interpret it to make sense.
Yes. I did find it funny when he's like, Dad, I'm really trying to get a hold of you. And then he's like waiting for like, it's like it shows in the film, like just a few seconds pass. And he's like, oh, why didn't he respond? I was just like, wow, like that's some intensive, like faster than light communication there. I mean, I have a question of like, you know, that whole thing of getting onto the far side of the moon to block out our own radio signals and everything. Are we still limited, though, by the factor of a lot of signals at like 100 light years away or to 200 light years away essentially become so faint that it would be very difficult for us to detect?
I think we could. That, in fact, if you look at how our radio technology has improved since we started building radio telescopes a few decades ago, and then continue that growth rate for just a couple hundred years, we're going to be able to pick up our level of leakage radiation out to about 500 light years.
Okay.
So I think it's not difficult to pick up even accidental radio signals. We can't do it right now, but come back 10, 20 years from now and we'll be able to.
Yeah. Well, and so another aspect, obviously, that we've been touching on a little bit with the film is it delves into the psychology of astronauts a lot. And you see in the film, the main character is, you know, very like cool as a cucumber. Nothing bothers him. It's almost sort of a older depiction, I think, of what astronauts are, of sort of the right stuff guys, you know, nothing bothers them. I wanted to sort of get your viewpoint because you work in psychology and things of that nature, of if this idea of the emotionless astronaut is a trope that should be retired, or if it's something that perhaps is still necessary when thinking about going further out into the cosmos.
I think it would morph because in the early days, right, there's the right stuff. These are fighter pilots who've been trained to be astronauts. And if you're going to the moon and back, that's a 10-day journey. If it's tough, you're having problems with your crewmates, just suck it up and deal with it. You don't feel good because you're bloated and you're floating around in zero G. Tough it out. But when the missions become as long as going to the outer solar system, you don't have that luxury. And so then the question is, what's the new right stuff look like? And right now, we're seeing a different transformation. On space stations, there's a lot of emphasis on being a team player, of being able to coordinate, of being able to appreciate people from other cultures who have different ways of doing things. But for me, the great part about this film that captured something that I think is usually missed is that what does it take, what kind of mindset does it take to go on that sort of a mission? Brad Pitt's character says, I compartmentalize. I have these strong feelings of rage, but I have them submerged. Is that really a viable strategy? I think what I saw is not just what are the pressures of being in space, but what are the pressures of someone who's getting ready to go to space? You know, as you say, he's cool. His pulse never goes above 80 beats per minute, even when he's plummeting to his what seems like an imminent death, but it's like, I'm doing the best I can. But he's focusing, as he puts it, on the most important thing right now. And as he was getting ready to go out into space, that did not include Liv Tyler, his wife. I mean, she was like, you're a distraction, lady. And so that does not make for a nurturing relationship. If that's your mindset, everything is focused on the mission.
I guess that was the big theme of the movie, right? It was unbalanced toward this focus and this kind of compartmentalization of all that stress. Yeah. And it's really interesting to talk about how the differences between that right stuff era, because presumably that's like more risky than the space travel they're depicting. It's almost routine, the kind of missions they're going on. So it's more about endurance and long-term effects than it is about the immediate fear of death from experimental rockets.
And we saw what happens then when the astronauts who are used to those routine missions get thrown into a situation right. where it's not routine. You know, the folks on the shuttle that brought Brad Pitt from the moon to Mars, as he described them, these are scientists, these are technicians, they're very cool about the whole thing. But then when there's a disaster, the captain gets killed and the second in command has to take over, he's just out of his depth completely.
Yeah.
That was at least amazing to watch, the people who are just like, man, you are not cut out for space for sure, because they're freaking out. And you can see, you know, how quickly that leads to the death of other astronauts.
And it's not realistic that they would be freaking out, that someone who freaks out would be selected on those missions. Because one of the things, you know, as Brad Pitt's trying to break in so that, to their spaceship so he can hitch a ride to Neptune, the captain, the new captain, is now saying, mission control, what do I do? Give me directions. Mm. Anyone who's going to Neptune is going to be used to acting autonomously. That's the big shift, even from our current missions. You know, right now, someone is even at the moon, they have a problem, they call mission control. In 2 seconds, they can get an answer. You know, at Mars, it could take up to 40 minutes for a round trip exchange.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and some of the other ways that we see depicted in the film of people dealing with psychology, although it was left unsure if it was actually effective, was we see Brad Pitt in a room with video projections of Earth and birds and things of that nature. And I actually kind of appreciated that, because it shows like a more present day version of a holodeck, because it's not a holodeck at all. It's just video projections and sounds and everything. But they're clearly like, oh, maybe some holodeck like time will be like fine, but it's just video projections.
Yeah,
like,
reminded me, it's a depiction of the movie Sunshine had something similar. The astronauts there would kind of relax and decompress in these with visual stimuli. Is that something that works?
Well, so far, astronauts haven't needed that, because if you're in the International Space Station, the thing they love to do when they've got some free time is to look out the window and see the Earth below. Mm. And even from the moon, you can see this fragile blue marble up in space. But when you get out to Mars or beyond, that's all gone. And so it's part of that connection of being able to look back evokes what some have called the overview effect, that you get a new perspective now on life on Earth. And when you're an astronaut, even if you're up at the space station for several months, a year, it's a constant reminder of what you have to return to. Mm. That's all going to be gone if you get so far away you can't see Earth.
Yeah. Do you think like immersive video is helpful, or do you think it'll need to be a bit more tactile for...
You know, I think there'll be an emphasis on a lot of different modalities. It could be scent, it could be sounds, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it was a little bit crude in the depiction in Ad Astra. You see instruments hanging on the walls, and you know, this is not a full-blown holodeck.
What about the tests that he had to go through regularly? And
so these are psych evaluations. So it's, you know, I slept 8 hours last night, no bad dreams, I'm feeling calm, I'm on task. And as he was doing that, there was a little monitor on his neck. And then immediately afterwards, so this is being monitored, he gets the go-ahead, you passed your psych eval. And so those sorts of monitorings are important, but it's also really hard for astronauts to be honest, because they say, I'm really feeling depressed, I'm really feeling anxious. They worry that they're not going to get to go on another mission. Mm-hmm. And so the way it's done in the real world is you have a psychologist back at NASA who doesn't talk with other people, and you can talk about the problems you're having in confidence. Or you can do something we saw a little hint of when he went to his own personal computer and he downloaded a file. If you have your own little mini PC and a thumb drive, you now have a therapist on a thumb drive. So you can get some guidance in how to deal with conflicts, with other astronauts, with signs of depression. Those are actually being developed for astronauts to use.
Hmm. That's pretty cool. Like, where do you think, astronauts need to go to from here, like in terms of like going to Mars? And, you know, everyone's focused on going to Mars, and you're talking about vulnerability and things sort of grounding you more to Earth. Is there any more parts to the equation that really people are needing to look into, or are those kind of two elements like enough to like make sure that we have astronauts that don't exactly lose it on these long duration missions.
Well, I think the bigger issue, so I think the idea of being isolated for long periods of time, or being bored, because really think about it, these astronauts have been selected to be these great explorers and to just kind of jump in. Once they get to Mars, they're going to be in their element. So how do you survive the boredom of months on the way there and months on the way back? You know, I think we've gotten some clues about what astronauts can do. Some of the astronauts have been very good at using social media to communicate with folks back home. And I think one of the big challenges, especially on one of these monumental missions of going to moon, being the first man or woman to step on the moon or on Mars, you come home. How do you ever beat that? Mm-hmm. How do you ever find something that's going to be better than that? So I think those are some of the real challenges. You need to think, especially after you've done your main mission, now what is going to happen to me after I get home?
Yeah, well, and I feel like I see astronauts struggle with that today, because I see astronauts come back from going in space and then they launch a company or have some big effort. But it's never, you know, they never get to introduce any further about like, well, they created this great company. It's like, nope, they went to space. Like that is...
That defines them.
That defines them. Yeah.
But I thought that was actually the nice element of how did Brad Pitt's character deal with going out into space. He's searching for, he wants some kind of reconciliation with his father. And ultimately, at the end, he realized he had to let go of his father. And, you know, he confronted his dad. He hadn't seen him since he was 16. And his dad said, you know, I never loved you. And he says, I understand that. And it's okay. But I'm taking you home again. And bringing him back home, his dad said, you have to let me go. And to me, what was so beautiful about that is both of them let go. Because Tommy Lee Jones' character, his dad, had been out there saying, I have to keep on this mission. I cannot stop. There's an infinite amount of work to do. And at the end, he said, I have to let go and you have to let me go. And it was only when he let go that Brad Pitt could come back using that same core characteristic of focusing on the most important thing at hand. But now it wasn't a space mission. Now it was a good cup of coffee and his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also don't see, I mean, in the real world, these one-way missions, right? Like this, the mission Tommy Lee Jones went and his crew, presumably, they weren't expecting to come back. And so could we see that as potentially, you know, a directive going forward or a one?
Absolutely. Well, we saw it on the Mars colony, because remember, the director of operations said she was born on Mars. She went on a vacation when she was a child to Earth, but she has lived her whole life on Mars. And so that's where you really start getting into some of the psychological problems, because if you can pick your astronauts and they complete their mission, you can screen them as much as you want and find people who really probably will be able to stand the challenges. But once you have a colony and people are born, they're going to have the natural tendencies of some people are going to be stable and some people are going to have a harder time. And so there's nothing you can do at that point. And when it's something as distant as a base on Mars, that now becomes an increasingly autonomous colony.
The sense of identity, it's explored in The Expanse, for example, where you know the Martians are, they're humans.
That's right. But they're the first Martians, the humans who were born there.
Yeah, well, so I guess my final question is, for people who haven't seen the movie yet, you know, where do you feel this movie is in terms of the portfolio of space movies? Like, what does this movie add that maybe, you know, we don't get with Interstellar and Gravity? And, you know, we have all these space movies now, which is really awesome. Like, what unique factor do you think this adds to the portfolio of space movies?
I think this adds in two ways. First of all, it really gets at this question of, as we search for other life in the universe, what happens? We've always focused on what happens if we discover it, but what happens if we don't? And then secondly, what does it take for humans to go beyond Earth and not just project our own sense of astronauts today, but really think about what those differences of traveling such vast distances is going to have on what it takes to accomplish the mission at all?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Glad to be back.
I love that conversation. It's great having Doug back, and really lot more to think about in the movie. I think watching it, you know, as we watch these space movies, we definitely want to put a little bit of a critical eye on the depiction, especially if it's trying to depict a quote unquote realistic future for space exploration, which I think this film does successfully in a few different ways, but then also the whole psychological aspect of it.
Yeah, I think Doug actually got me to turn around a little bit because I said at the start of the conversation that I felt that the plot was kind of lacking in depth and maybe a little simple, but perhaps in its simplicity, it is trying to really focus in on these key relationships of astronauts and what it's like to go way far out into outer space and what sort of impacts that's going to have on you.
Mm-hmm. In a way that can connect with the kind of relationships that we all have with our family, but of course in this very fantastical way. Something that we didn't mention is that one new thing this film depicts is that father-son relationship, a generational difference in the space program, which we eventually will get to, right? You know, NASA's only been around for so many years, but there will eventually be astronauts that may be the children of other astronauts.
Well, yeah. I mean, Richard Garriott is the son of Owen Garriott. Mm-hmm. So that's a father-son astronaut duo. So we have a little bit instances of it, but also, you know, there were the generational aspects of the woman who lives on Mars and her parents are astronauts. And maybe she's not an astronaut per se, but she's definitely on that sort of spacefaring generational, you know, timeline.
Yeah, yeah. And the film, I think, definitely pays homage to a lot of the other great space movies of the past, from 2001 to even things more recently like Interstellar. Definitely, if you're going to see it, watching the biggest screen possible is the other recommendation, since there are a lot of beautiful visuals in there. Do we have recommendations for people who want to?
Yeah. So Doug has a really great book called The Psychology of Space Exploration that you might want to check out, Contemporary Research in Historical Perspective. So if you are really into how psychology impacts human spaceflight and things of that nature, definitely check out that book.
And we'll have more talk of other space-related movies in the future on Offworld. You can always listen to us as a podcast as well. Just go to tested.com/offworld. But thanks for listening or watching, and we'll see you next time.